Imagine sliding a receipt across a customer service desk. Only, you know, the receipt is like a mile long.
Yeah, and the store you were returning the item to is the United States federal government.
Right. And the refund you are calmly asking for is $166 billion. I mean, it sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
It really does. But as of last week, that is a legal reality.
It is. So today, for this deep dive, we are looking at the fascinating, honestly chaotic fallout of that exact situation. We have a towering stack of recent research sitting in front of us, detailing the financial logistics, the system crashes, and the, well, the rather surprising economic reality of what actually happens when a nationwide tariff policy is suddenly struck down by the courts.
Yeah, because we are watching a colossal sum of money suddenly forced to reverse course. And the resulting shockwaves are exposing just how fragile our global trade infrastructure really is. Mm. I mean, the Treasury simply does not have a return button built for a transaction of that scale.
Exactly. Now, before we jump into the deep end, a quick but necessary note to you listening. The case files we are exploring today cover some highly politically charged events, specifically the Trump administration's tariff policies, and a major Supreme Court ruling that overturned them.
Right, which is a sensitive topic.
Very. So we want to establish right up front, in this deep dive, we are absolutely not endorsing any political viewpoints, and we are not taking sides.
No, not at all.
Our objective is strictly and impartially to unpack the mechanics, the numbers, and the systemic fallout detailed in the data. We are just here to examine the facts on the ground.
Yeah, we are looking at the structural integrity of the plumbing, not, you know, debating the architect who designed the building.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand how the government is scrambling to issue this unprecedented refund, we have to look at how they opened the register in the first place. So let's rewind the timeline a bit. In April 2025, the Trump administration enacted the Liberation Day tariffs. And the philosophy there was traditional protectionism, right? Make foreign goods more expensive to import so domestic industries are shielded from cheaper overseas competition.
Right, which is an economic lever that goes back to the founding of the country. But the administration didn't use a standard trade law to do it. They used an emergency statute.
Okay.
Yeah, looking through the records, they invoked the International Emergency Economic Powers Act.
So explain this to me like I'm five, because, I mean, tariffs on steel or washing machines don't exactly sound like a sudden national crisis.
Well, that is the exact question the courts asked. It was originally designed to give the president sweeping powers to deal with unusual and extraordinary threats, usually foreign threats, to the national security or economy of the United States. Think freezing the assets of a hostile foreign government or blocking trade with a nation, funding terrorism. It was meant for acute geopolitical crises.
But in this case, it was being used as a blanket economic shield for domestic industries.
Correct. The administration essentially categorized general overseas economic competition as a national emergency to bypass Congress and enact sweeping tariffs. That is where the legal foundation completely cracked.
Because on February 20th of this year, the Supreme Court basically called their bluff. They declared the administration overstepped its authority under that 1977 emergency statute.
And what's fascinating here is just the sheer systemic shock of that gavel falling. It cannot be overstated.
Yeah.
The moment the Supreme Court issues that ruling, the federal government goes from being a sovereign collector of revenue to acting as a debtor to tens of thousands of individual businesses simultaneously.
Right. And the actual financial hammer dropped a few weeks later. On March 4, 2026, Judge Richard Eaton of the U.S. Court of International Trade officially ordered the government to refund all the tariffs collected over the previous 10 months.
The numbers on that are just staggering.
They really are. Let's look at the scale of this order from the data. The refund total is $166 billion. It involves an estimated 56,000 eligible importers, covering over 50 million individual shipments.
Wow.
And there are already over 3,000 companies filing suit against the government just to guarantee their place in line.
Yeah, and many of those companies actually saw the writing on the wall and filed those lawsuits before the Supreme Court ruling even came down. But being first in line doesn't mean much when the door is locked. The current estimated wait time to actually get the money into their bank accounts is 2 to 3 months.
Well, hold on. I mean, the government prints money, right? The Treasury manages trillions of dollars a year. Why is it a 2 to 3 month wait? Why can't the government just issue a blanket tax credit for these 56,000 companies for next year and call it even?
I mean, that is a logical thought, but customs and trade law do not function like income tax.
Mm.
The courts rule that these specific funds were collected illegally
Right.
So legally, the government cannot just hold on to ill-gotten funds and offer a credit against future unrelated tax liabilities. They are mandated to physically return the exact dollars to the exact entity that paid them, corresponding to the exact shipment.
Which means someone has to verify all 50 million of those shipments? It is, I mean, it's like the IRS telling the entire population of a medium-sized city that they are all owed a life-changing refund, but then making every single one of them dig through months of old, crumpled receipts to prove exactly what they bought, when they bought it, and how much the tax was.
It is an absolute auditing nightmare. A judge signing a document to mandate a refund is remarkably simple on paper. But the physical, digital, and bureaucratic reality of moving $166 billion backward out the door. That requires digital infrastructure that simply did not exist on March 4th.
Which brings us to a fascinating, albeit painful, part of this research, the bottleneck of reversing the river. Normally, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, collects tariffs using a system called ACE. That stands for the Automated Commercial Environment Secure Data Portal.
Yeah. ACE is the lifeblood of U.S. imports.
Mm.
Every time a shipping container arrives at a port, customs brokers use ACE to file paperwork and pay the duties. It is a highly optimized funnel.
Right.
It catches funds from millions of distinct global entry points and drops them straight into one central treasury bucket.
But it only goes one way. It takes money in. So to process this unprecedented refund, the CBP had to scramble. They built a whole new apparatus and embedded it inside of ACE. They called this new system CAPE, the Consolidated Administration and Processing of Entries.
And anytime you combine a frantic court-mandated deadline with the launch of a new government software portal, you are practically guaranteeing friction.
Friction doesn't even begin to cover it. The case files detail the rollout of the CAPE system on April 20, 2026. It was catastrophic.
Mm.
Businesses and customs brokers logging in to claim their refunds were met with agonizingly slow load times. Screens would freeze mid-submission. The system threw endless, unexplainable errors.
Well, think about the fundamental architecture here. You are taking a system designed to act as a funnel, and you are trying to force it to act like a sprinkler system. It was never built to push money outward to 56,000 different, highly specific bank accounts based on variable historical data.
Wait, so they basically took a system designed to funnel money inward, bolted a new attachment onto it, and then tried to run the whole thing in reverse.
That is exactly what they did.
That sounds like trying to drink from a fire hose backward. I mean, in the digital age, we return things on our phones in 3 seconds. Why is reversing a digital transaction at the federal level so different?
Because a return on your phone happens within a closed, modern ecosystem like Amazon or a specific retailer. CAPE, on the other hand, is trying to reconcile data from thousands of third-party customs broker software programs, cross-referencing it with an ancient federal mainframe, all while enforcing strict legal compliance.
Right.
The data refers to it as a paperwork marathon.
Let's talk about that marathon, because getting through the CAPE portal isn't just about waiting for a loading bar. You need flawless documentation. We are talking granular import records, absolute proof of tariff payments, detailed shipment data going back 10 months.
And there is zero margin for error. If there is a single mismatched digit, an unclear entry, or, you know, slight discrepancy in the date, the system flags it automatically.
Wow.
That triggers a manual review by a human customs officer, which creates staggering delays, or it just results in an outright rejection of the claim.
Plus, we still have to factor in those 3,000 ongoing lawsuits. That adds a whole layer of legal gray area.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these refund claims are stalled simply because they are tied up in broader, separate trade disputes.
Right, which leaves the money sitting there, legally owed, but completely locked behind frozen computer screens and a mountain of red tape.
But here's where it gets really interesting. And honestly, it is a bit tough to swallow if you are the one doing the everyday shopping. Because even if the CAPE portal worked flawlessly, the most controversial revelation in this stack of research isn't how the money is refunded. It is who gets to keep it.
Yeah. This cuts right to the core of how global supply chains actually function.
Right. Let's look at the breakdown of who gets a slice of this pie. According to the data, the manufacturers are going to get the vast majority of it. Large retailers will get some of it. And consumers, you and I, we get absolutely nothing.
Which, this raises an important question, right? If the everyday consumer is the one who ultimately felt the pinch of higher prices at the cash register over the last 10 months, why are they entirely cut out of the refund?
Let me see if I have this straight. Let's invent a scenario. Imagine I go to a dealership to buy a car. The car is assembled domestically, but the steering wheel and the microchips are imported from overseas.
Okay.
When those parts hit the port, the government assesses the tariffs on them. That cost hits the manufacturer first, but the manufacturer doesn't just eat that loss.
No, they pass it down the line.
Exactly. The manufacturer charges the regional distribution center more to cover the tariff. The distribution center then charges the local car dealer more. Finally, the dealer bakes that extra cost right to the sticker price. So when I drive that car off the lot, I am the one who actually paid the financial penalty of that tariff.
Precisely. The cost of the tariff cascades down the entire supply chain until it hits the absolute bottom, which is a consumer.
But, and this is the kicker, when the government is forced to issue the refund through CAPE, the check only goes to the importer of record. That is the specific company that physically filed the customs paperwork at the port and handed the money to the government 10 months ago.
Which means the manufacturer gets a multi-million dollar direct deposit from the Treasury. But the individual who paid an extra $1,000 for their car, they have no legal standing to claim a refund from the government or the dealership.
That is a staggering realization. The consumer paid the penalty for an unconstitutional policy, but the corporation gets the multi-billion dollar payout.
It illustrates a hard structural truth about economics. Tariffs operate as an indirect tax on citizens. And the reality of an indirect tax is that it rarely, if ever, features an indirect refund.
Right.
The federal government simply has no mechanism to trace the fraction of a tariff from an imported steering wheel through a corporate ledger down to an individual citizen's auto loan.
Now, looking closely at the research, there are a couple of very notable exceptions where the consumer might actually see some benefit from this refund, but it entirely depends on the business model of the company involved.
Yes, the data highlights a fascinating divergence in how different sectors are handling this windfall.
FedEx is the prime example. They have explicitly stated that if they receive refunds from the CAPE portal, they are actually going to issue direct refunds to the shippers and consumers who originally bore those charges.
And why is FedEx able to do that when an auto manufacturer cannot?
Because of the granularity of their data. FedEx operates as a direct intermediary. They know exactly, down to the cent, what tariff was applied to what specific package, shipped by what specific person, on what specific day. They essentially have the digital receipts to literally hit reverse.
It is a luxury of their specific logistics model. They don't have a cascading supply chain blurring the lines of who paid what.
Right. And then you have companies like Costco taking a totally different approach. Costco isn't going to mail you a check for the extra money you spent on imported televisions over the last 10 months, but they have publicly stated that they plan to pass their share of the savings along through lower shelf prices moving forward.
Okay, so it is a delayed benefit.
Exactly. But for the vast majority of goods out there, if you paid higher prices, you are simply out of luck.
It creates a profound disconnect between legal restitution and economic reality. The ledgers are being balanced at the federal level, but the everyday consumer's wallet remains lighter. The system corrected the legal error, but it cannot correct the economic damage.
And just when you think this deep dive couldn't get more labyrinthine, we have to look at what is happening right this second. Because while thousands of businesses are screaming at their monitors, desperately trying to get the CAPE portal to load so they can reclaim their money, the story of the tariffs themselves is far from over.
No, not at all.
The administration did not just pack up their bags and concede after the Supreme Court ruling.
In global trade, policy abhors a vacuum. They immediately pivoted to a backup plan.
A backup plan from the archives. The research notes that the president is now invoking Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974. This implements a brand new temporary 10% tariff to replace the Liberation Day tariffs that the Supreme Court just struck down.
And this is where the specific legal mechanisms matter. Why Section 122? Section 122 is specifically designed to deal with large balance of payments deficits.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning if the United States is importing significantly more foreign goods than it is exporting, and that imbalance threatens the value of the dollar or the broader economy, Section 122 allows the president to impose a temporary import surcharge, a tariff, up to 15% to try and balance the scales.
Wait, so they just dug into the archives, found a different law from the 1970s with a different legal justification, and slapped a new 10% tariff on the exact same goods?
Effectively, yes. They changed the legal rationale from a national security emergency to a balance of payments deficit. But the key constraint with Section 122 is the word temporary.
Right. The data shows there is a very strict ticking clock attached to this. Section 122 is only valid for 150 days. The clock started on February 24th, which means this new legal justification expires in late July.
It is a stopgap measure. It basically buys the administration 5 months.
And what happens when those 150 days run out? The reports indicate the administration is already lining up their next move. When the Section 122 clock expires, they are preparing to try and reinstate the tariffs permanently using Section 301 of that same 1974 Trade Act.
And Section 301 is a whole different beast. It gives the government the power to enforce trade agreements and penalize foreign countries that engage in unjustifiable or unreasonable trade practices that burden U.S. commerce. It is a much more aggressive, targeted legal weapon.
So what does this all mean? From a bird's eye view, it feels like we are watching an impossibly high-stakes game of bureaucratic whack-a-mole.
That is an accurate assessment. It leaves the entirety of global trade in an incredible state of suspense. I mean, imagine being an importer trying to plan your business right now. Do you price your incoming goods based on the unprecedented refund you hope to get from CAPE eventually?
Right.
Do you price them based on today's temporary Section 122 tariff? Or do you try to predict the fallout of tomorrow's threatened Section 301 policy? Long-term strategic planning is nearly impossible in this environment.
You literally have billions of dollars legally required to move and reverse, while simultaneously new tariffs are being slapped onto the books to move money forward under completely new legal justifications.
It is a masterclass in the unintended consequences of rapid unilateral policy shifts. The judicial system worked exactly as designed to check an overreach of power. But the logistical, digital, and economic system simply could not keep up with the whiplash.
Well, we have covered a tremendous amount of ground today. We trace the journey from a historic Supreme Court ruling that called the administration's bluff on an old emergency law. We looked at the glitchy, overwhelmed CAPE portal trying to push a river of money backward against its natural current.
Yeah.
We unpacked the harsh reality of the supply chain, where corporations fight for their slice of the refund pie while the everyday consumer is left holding the bag. And finally, we looked at the relentless whack-a-mole of trade laws keeping the global market guessing.
The complexity of untangling a nationwide policy is often far more daunting than enacting it in the first place.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this deep dive, there is one final lingering thought straight from the core of this research. It is something we want you to mull over the next time you are at the store, looking at the price of a television, a car, or groceries.
It is the central dilemma underlying all of this data. If a tariff ultimately acts as an unavoidable indirect tax on the everyday American consumer, who morally and legally should get the refund when that tax is ruled unconstitutional?
You take a monumental receipt back to the customer service desk. The government acknowledges the mistake and hands over the cash. But who is really standing there to receive it? Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems around you. Keep looking closely at the receipts, and we will catch you next time.